Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here are your hosts, Bill Kennard and Tom Grandy.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard. This month's program is titled The Art and Science of Retaining Talent. Retaining talent in today's marketplace is as tough as it's ever been. The better a company understands the art and science of retaining talent, the more likely they are to retain employees. The days of just providing a fair wage and a few basic benefits being enough to retain employees long-term are over. This month, I had a conversation with Vince Guerra of Arthur J. Gallagher, where he talks about the value of engagement, tracking employee retention, internal branding, communication touchpoints, as well as a multiplicity of other practical suggestions. Vince Guerra serves as an area vice president for Arthur J. Gallagher, the third largest insurance consulting and risk management firm in the world. He brings more than two decades of experience to his clients, with expertise in human capital, employee benefits, organizational strategy, private equity, and mergers and acquisitions. Vince earned a Bachelor of Science in Marketing from Liberty University and his Master's from Robert Morris University. He has also earned three professional designations, including Chartered Life Underwriter, Registered Health Insurance Underwriter, and Registered Employee Benefits Consultant. He is a member of Hope Church and a board member for the Children's Museum of the Upstate in South Carolina. He resides in South Carolina with his wife and four children. And now, with the art and science of retaining talent, here is Vince Guerra with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation. Well, Vince, you know, when I started this company years ago, it was pretty easy, quite frankly, because it was me and it was one person here in the office. But, you know, we've grown a lot since then. We've got a lot more people now today. And it's a whole lot harder. And you're dealing with this every day of the week, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely.
So you know, the companies you're working with on a regular basis span from what sizes?
So we have small businesses with single-digit employees all the way up to 1,000-plus employees.
So it's a whole different ball of game.
Tens of thousands of employees, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, we look at some of the struggles today. I mean, this employment environment that we're in today is such a challenge. I mean, you think about you can't find people, can't find talented people, let alone people that can fog a mirror sometimes. How do we get here? I mean, there's a whole bunch of different things that are kind of wrapped up in that question of how do we get here? What are you seeing from your side in terms of how we got here in the environment we're in today?
Well, I think you really have to step back and look at it just even in the last 5 to 10 years pre-pandemic. I mean, it was kind of tough to find people. It had started, there was obviously higher unemployment in 2008 with the recession. And then we moved into a period where things kind of snapped back and boomerang around, and it was lower unemployment and getting more and more difficult to find people. And then you go right into the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And with the pandemic, I always like to compare it to, you know, when the electricity goes off in your house, and then it comes back on. The clocks all have to be updated.
I hate that.
I know, it's frustrating. And so the internet sometimes doesn't work. You have to reboot your – so there's all these things that you just don't know what's going to happen when the electricity – well, then you factor that into a global economy shutting down, trillions of dollars just stopping overnight, and you're talking about 60 days where it shuts down, and now we reset that. We turn it back on. And what are the consequences of that?
Sure.
Well, there's no way to predict those. I mean, there's absolutely no way. How do you, you know, you've got extended unemployment and beefed up unemployment where people don't even need or want to go back to work. Mm-hmm. And that can obviously have a big impact if you're looking at skilled employees or unskilled employees who can stay at home now and collect a check. It gets harder and harder to find employees who are going to come to work, do a good job, and just commit to working for your company and helping you grow.
And I think one of the things that certainly compounded that throughout the pandemic, as most of our listeners know, is that, you know, the trades were deemed essential, which I hate the term anyway, right? Because it means that every other company is not essential, which means why am I here? But that's a whole other conversation, isn't it? And many of them had record years. They had their biggest years ever during the pandemic. Yet they're still trying to find people, still trying to
to get people who will come in. And as you said, they're skilled people in many cases. So how do I get them the skills? Mm-hmm. That's a challenge. So that results in, I think, one of the other areas of overworking them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because now we're, yeah, and how much of an issue is that?
Well, and that lends itself to where else can they go, mm-hmm. and feel like they are not being worked as hard and potentially making more money. So mm-hmm. the same, you know, they were deemed necessary and to stay open during the pandemic, but so was a lot of manufacturing.
Sure.
And so if they can leave a job as a plumber or electrician and go work in a manufacturing space for more money, mm-hmm. potentially less hours, maybe a little less stress, then mm-hmm. then that's going to be a difficult situation for an employer. So as you're recruiting people, you know, and even looking at this pandemic, as now we've shifted and come out of the pandemic, mm-hmm. and now you're looking at inflationary pressures and these sorts of things. So mm-hmm. now the retention has gone from, okay, do people feel safe at work? That's all we heard about was, do people feel safe when they come back to work? And to be honest, probably a lot of your constituents were kind of thinking, what pandemic? Like, let's get to work, right?
Right.
And that's, I can totally identify with that.
Certainly many business owners.
Yes.
Right. But a lot of the team members,
yes.
weren't always thinking that.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so you had to be very focused on safety. Mm-hmm. And even going into whether it's a home or a business, what about where they're going? Are they focused on safety? And right. so there was all these fears and all these pressures involved, and those have kind of ceased. But now we've seen where we've pumped money into the economy, and that's kind of come back in inflationary pressures, mm-hmm. and continued workforce shortage and labor shortage. And so now we've seen compensation rise dramatically.
Yeah, so I think all of those, and I want to come back to that one because I want to talk about that one a little bit. There's this term, and so let's jump into it. A term that's out there. In fact, you recently wrote an article in Atlanta Trend that I thought was awesome, and you started out, your opening lines were, you know, the Great Recession, the Big Quit, Quiet Quitting, the Great Reshuffle, right? All those terms that we hear all the time. So this quiet quitting, that's an interesting term. What is that? What does that mean?
Yeah. So, and this just inbuilt, there's a new term called the Great Resentment, where people are actually leaving their job, and then the Big Regret.
The Big Regret. Okay.
And so they left for what they thought was greener pastures, and it turns out, well, it's not greener pastures, and now they're considering going back. Mm. And so, you know, just as a heads up, if people leave your company, stay in touch and stay in good terms with them, because the grass isn't always greener, as we know. So quiet quitting is the term the legacy term that we use in human capital is presenteeism. And so most people are familiar with absenteeism, mm-hmm. which is where you're just not at your job.
Right.
Presenteeism is where you're at your job, but you're not engaged. And sometimes that's because of a mental health issue. Sometimes it's because of financial stress. Sometimes it's because of a physical issue. And so when we talk about presenteeism or quiet quitting, what we've seen is a form of presenteeism that's actually come in because, well, if we're working together and you suddenly leave for a new job that's mm-hmm. better pay and potentially better hours, you know, again, the grass is greener. Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm starting to shut down inside as far as my engagement into my work. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of quietly quitting. I'm starting to put out feelers. I'm starting to lose my engagement in my work and say, mm-hmm. hey, maybe there's something better out there for me too.
What about this idea of, because really some of and I hate saying younger generations, but—
No, that's
but,
great.
Right, you know, one of the challenges, I think, is older generations, right? We're taught yes. that just, you know, do your job, keep your head down, go,
knuckle
go,
knuckle down,
go,
right? That's right.
Now, yeah, absolutely, right? You know, and you know, so many today coming into the workforce or who have been here for a little bit now don't look at it that way, mm-hmm. right? And so they talk about the idea of work-life balance. First off, is that a real thing? I mean, is it obtainable? Let's put it that way.
It is. It's hard because when you get in, work-life balance to you is different than work-life balance mm-hmm. to me. And so there's again, another big term is work-life integration. And so mm-hmm. how do we, maybe we still, obviously we have to get the work done, but maybe we do it in a different manner to where it's not 8 to 5 or, 8 to 7, whatever your typical hours mm-hmm. are. And so, you know, as a plumber and electrician, you think, well, we got to stay until we get the job done. And rightly so. That's mm-hmm. how you build up a good client base.
Right.
Is there a way to think through that with your workforce that's different? Because this younger generation that's coming up, the Gen Zs, the Gen Y, they have such a different view of work than boomers, Gen X, in our generations.
Mm-hmm. So how much of that, you know, that quiet quitting, as we talk about, falls back to, okay, there's not someplace else necessarily that I'm going to go, or I'm not going to take maybe the initiative to go there, or I just don't know what else is available, but I want more time to myself. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just going to put in the effort that equals what I think I'm being paid. Mm-hmm. And no more.
Mm-hmm. The bare minimum, so to speak.
Right. But I'm still here. I'm still your employee, right? I'm still on the team. But I'm really
not. That's where it's up to the employer to help. It's not your job to motivate people. People are either motivated or they're not. There's intrinsic motivation. But you can do things to not demotivate them. Mm-hmm. So if an employee is left alone, if they don't get enough feedback, positive feedback and any legitimate criticism, mm-hmm. if there's not this engagement with the organization, and that's really goes back to the owner and the management teams mm-hmm. and the executives who are in there as far as building a culture where people want to engage mm-hmm. because there are so many options now and people are hiring.
That just spurs a thought for me because I remember in a previous role, I reported to the president of the company again, in a role responsible for about $17 million worth of product and product sales. And remember at one point talking to the president of the company in our review going, okay, what are your objectives for me for this year? And he goes, well, grow sales.
Yeah.
I'm going, well, let's be a little bit more specific, right?
And he's thinking like, duh, grow sales, right?
Exactly, yeah. Right? And I'm going, there's got to be some specific goals because if you don't have any for me, I'm going to come up with my own, and they may or may not agree with what you want me to do.
Yes.
How much of an issue is that still pertaining, you know, to today?
So I think, what I've seen is that employers are getting better. There's more people out there coaching them on mm-hmm. the importance of values, the importance of sharing your vision, the importance of metrics, mm-hmm. and where I think I would say what you experienced was a little more rare. Most of the places where I've worked, we've had solid sales goals or mm-hmm. we've had solid metrics. Here's your expectations. I think kind of the cultural standpoint that's lagging is the qualitative standpoint mm-hmm. where you see a lack of communication and people don't feel engaged because mm-hmm. There's nothing that's facilitated within the organization. It's just kind of you have your piece of you have your little slice of pie, but you don't really get to see the big picture, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Yeah, I think and that's where, in this scenario, that's where it struck me is because, you know, I wanted more of that engagement, mm-hmm. didn't have it, didn't get it. Now, I was internally motivated. You know, I was going to succeed one way or another, with or without you. And so, worked to my advantage, I guess. But if I didn't have that inside or I didn't know how to get to the next step, mm-hmm. my guess is I'd have left.
Absolutely. And so there's a lot of small businesses mm-hmm. now that are looking at profit sharing programs. Mm-hmm. And so that's a great, you know, a lot of business owners, they probably overstate how engaged employees are. Because it's kind of if everything's good on their level, they assume everything's good in the organization.
Yeah.
And that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's easier for employers rather than coming in and I mean, let's be honest, kind of coming in with the touchy-feely stuff and, you know, they're not going to give their employees a hug and that's okay. But kind of a good basis to build off of is to come in and say, hey, we're going to start this profit-sharing program, and mm-hmm. I'm making up the numbers. We're going to take 10% of profits and divide it among the employees. Well, mm-hmm. if I have 10 employees, that's a big deal. That kind of facilitates conversation. Mm-hmm. Now we can start to play off of that. And, you know, eventually, my opinion, my recommendation, I think those the touchy-feely stuff is really the human stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more you can build interpersonal relationships within your organization, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. And so, you know, you go back to the old company picnics and those sorts of things. It depends on what you want to invest, but there are ways to do that in a cost-effective manner.
Sure. No question. So let's, you know, I want to go back to this article that you wrote because, again, I'm reading and I'm going, wow, I agree, right? So some of these items in there. So you were talking about, and you just kind of started getting into it a little bit here, talking about when you're dealing with your team, the idea of quantitative versus qualitative management and looking at that. Define that. What, at a high level, what are those two? What are those two things?
Sure. Quantitative, we're looking at objective numbers, so to speak. Mm-hmm. We're looking at metrics. And so when we talk about turnover, you know, business owners might think, we need people to fill these jobs. Well, how many people do you need? Mm-hmm. Are you calculating your turnover? How many people have left in the last 6 months to a year? Mm-hmm. Do you have a pipeline of new hirees, that potential hires?
Mm-hmm.
Are you proactively interviewing people even though there's no opening today, knowing that somebody might leave in the next 3 months?
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the factors where we want to stay focused on metrics, getting when we talk about benchmarking data or surveying data, do we know how our employees feel? But we can always, we want to know that, but we want to put it in a metric where it's on a scale of 1 to 10, how are we doing in compensation, benefits, work hours, work-life integration, those sorts of things. And so if you're asking them their feelings, it's kind of hard to do anything with that information. But if I'm consistently seeing a 3 out of 10 or an 8 out of 10, that gives me a better barometer.
Okay. So the let's kind of focus on these two areas a little bit, right? Because that is a, you know, we need to understand both sides of that coin, don't we? Because all too many times, business owners, especially in the trades, many times we got into this because we like working with our hands and fixing things.
That's it.
Right? And now all of a sudden we got to deal with all this touchy-feely stuff, as we say. And, you know, and that's just, that's not why I got into this, right?
Not a hugger, but right?
Unless you're a high eye, right? The, you know, high eyes are huggers, right? But that's a challenge for a lot of business owners, you know, especially while we're doing this. So let's talk about some of those items, because both the quantitative and the qualitative are important.
Very important.
So you referred to retention rates. I mean, really, what as a business leader, what do I need to be looking at, and why is it important for me to know this?
So you want to know when people are leaving. You want to know why they're leaving. So the exit interviews, we talked about that. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
But just from a pure rate standpoint, now if you have 5 employees, it's probably not as important.
I can remember that.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. I know why Jimmy left you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if when you get up 30, 40, 50 employees, you want to know the percentages because that's important to track over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the industry averages are going to vary based on if you are a law firm versus if you are a fast food chain.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important to know for your business, whether you're plumbing, electrician, HVAC, whatever it is, what does that look like over the next year, over the last year, and how can I project that out?
Sure.
So can I identify even, take if my turnover is 10%, can I identify, if I've got 30 employees, who are the 3 that I definitely think are potentially going to leave? Can I go ahead and project that?
Mm-hmm.
And then here's the other aspect, who's really important for me to keep? And so drilling down into every layer of your organization, and again, we're not talking about Amazon, we're talking 30 employees, but there's still layers there.
Mm-hmm.
I need to keep, you know, master electricians or skilled HVAC technicians and those sorts of things. So what am I doing to help facilitate retaining those employees, but it really starts with understanding the metrics behind it.
All right. So in that area, I had a couple of companies who actually approached me over the last 3 months, and it's kind of a spinoff to the ERC credit, the employee retention credit that business owners could qualify for, and that being the idea of a retention bonus for some of those key people. So there's two elements of that key person. The first one is, I think a lot of times business owners look at a key person and say, I can't survive without that individual. What's the danger to that?
if your organization is incumbent on one person staying, mm-hmm. I mean, that is not a good strategy. I mean, basically, they're the linchpin. If that linchpin leaves, the organization falls apart and you're going to be scrambling. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I would even argue you don't have a organization. You have a lot of dysfunction if you're so reliant on one person.
How many times do you think, though, that business leader, that's a perception, it's not reality?
I think the senior tech, I've
got to have Joe because, man, Joe's my guy, yeah. Right? Without Joe, I'm in trouble. And one of the things I've seen over and over again is when Joe suddenly leaves, the rest of the team flourishes.
Yeah, so I would say there's two sides to it. Mm-hmm. Is Joe a good team player? And here's the two sides. If he's a great team player, incentivize him to stay. Mm-hmm. And whether it's a promotion, management training, giving him more responsibility but more compensation for mm-hmm. it, bonuses, different retention tools like that.
Sure.
And then the flip side is if he's toxic to your culture, then start building your organization without Joe and get ready to move on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and just start to be ready for that one. Yeah. So this idea of retention bonus, is that the scenario that I've had actually laid out and a few different people in companies that I've dealt with is they actually sign an agreement that I will be here for the next year.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and yep. So I'm not going to leave, even though I'm an hourly employee or whatever it is. I'm agreeing I will be mm-hmm. here. At the end of 6 months, they get a bonus. At the end of 12 months, they get a second bonus. Does that, mm-hmm. that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And personally, in my work, I've signed those and where we have a non-compete. Mm-hmm. And so we won't go to a competing company and we get compensated X amount of dollars for that. So sure. That's very, very standard in the industry.
Good. All right. Anything else on the retention rates piece of the puzzle?
Nothing else on the retention rates. But I think there are some other metrics that are important. So we touched on surveys, mm-hmm. And so I would even recommend with other business owners that you know in your industry, talk to them. Mm-hmm. See if there's a common theme in why people are leaving. If they're calculating their turnover rates, what's their rate? Because mm-hmm. if you go to, let's say, I know somebody. Three counties over who runs the same type of business and their turnover rate is 3% and mine's 17%.
Mm-hmm.
There's maybe there's something wrong there.
Right. And when you talk about these surveys, and that's of my existing team, can I just do like a Survey Monkey and go out and put together my own quick little survey? And
yeah, it can be three questions. I mean, it can be as simple as how is our company doing in work-life integration? Do you feel like you have a future at this company? Because that's important. Mm-hmm. And then how likely would you be to refer a friend or a colleague to this company? And those are the types of questions. They're so simple. Don't overthink it. Just get it out and start building some data that you can go off of, because typically as soon as you receive that first response, mm-hmm. and by the way, make it anonymous. Johnny says we stink, right?
Yeah, right.
So, you know,
I asked him for their
Johnny's
name,
fired.
Their name and email or phone number, yeah. And everyone rated me 100%.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So okay. You want honest feedback and as best you can, even, you know, for the employer, have it go to a third party. You don't have to have it go back to you because typically, you know, and I've owned a small business with 10 employees. I could probably figure out who answered sure. this a certain way based on a conversation I've had with them in the yeah. last couple of weeks. So even figuring out a third party, whether it's an outside HR consultant mm-hmm. With somebody like yourself, or I'm assuming you can step
Absolutely.
In and help them
sure.
with that. And in this way, you're really de-identifying who's answering what.
You know, and so some of these, the responses, right? You had said use like a 1 to 10 scale.
Yes.
Rate this company on a scale of 1 to 10, that kind of thing. Or agree, disagree, likely, not likely, right? Those closed-end questions really become important in doing something like this, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I would always have an area where they could have comments, but you've got to have those 3 to 5 questions where it's just a likely, not likely, 1 to 10, those mm-hmm. sorts of things. And then I always like, if you want open-ended questions, and if your organization is in and you're working with somebody who can sort of filter through the narratives, mm-hmm. What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? What should we keep doing? What should we stop doing? And just some open-ended questions sure. like that, so you get some some feedback in their own words.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So you also, under the quantitative yet, we're still there, you mentioned benchmarking. Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting because we do benchmarking here at Grandy all the time with regard to finding talent and do I have the right person who's got the ability to be a superior performer,
mm-hmm.
right? But you're talking about benchmarking a little bit differently here, really in terms of what are we paying? What are some of the benefits that we have that we're bringing to the table?
Mm-hmm.
First off, how much of a problem is that today amongst business owners, as far as paying the people where they need to be, that sort of thing?
So I think one of the biggest issues is if you make, and I'm just going to make this up, if you make $35 an hour and that works for you, mm-hmm. then you're probably not looking. In this environment, until you drive down the street and see somebody's paying $37 an hour, mm-hmm. and it's on their billboard outside of their offices. And so that's something that we just don't see, whether it's fast food or HVAC technicians, mm-hmm. or you'll even see it in more white-collar professions. So that's where it's very different. And I would say, when we're talking about benchmarking, you have to look at compensation and benefits. We call that the blocking and tackling, mm-hmm. so to speak. If you have the greatest organization in the world, but you're not paying appropriately and having a on par, I'll even say generous mm-hmm. benefit plan, then you're behind the curve.
And really today, that's such an issue because, mm-hmm. I mean, quite frankly, you talk about it being on the marquee, right? I look out the back window of our building and I can find out I can go, make tacos for $17.50 an hour. That has really changed today and it's changing rapidly, isn't mm-hmm. it?
It's absolutely. And so another factor that we see in there is time off.
Mm-hmm.
What's your time off policy? And is it easy to use? Do you just have X amount of sick days and X amount of personal days, or is it banked together? And then what's the scale for somebody who's 6 months in versus 3 months in versus 10 years in?
Mm-hmm.
And so the more generous we can get on that. And obviously, you have to run a business. So when
right.
it's that combination and that tension of what's generous mm-hmm. without impacting the business negatively.
So let me ask on that piece of the puzzle, one of those, you said the more generous you can be on that end, you're talking with time off.
Yes.
Okay, but so in today's environment, in fact, just last week, had a conversation with a business owner who we're looking at what are their benefits that they offer their employees, and, mm-hmm. and well, I don't get anything for the first, for the first year.
Okay.
Especially if I'm looking at bringing somebody in who can have an impact on my business today, how important is it to give them something right out of the gate?
So if you're talking about a health insurance plan, they're a W-2 employee, you can't wait a year. That would be out of compliance.
Right.
So,
time off and some of those things.
Right. And I say all that to say, there's always compliance issues where mm-hmm. there has to be kind of across the board, we offer everybody this plan.
Right.
But that's a great point. There are factors where you can layer in incentives and bonuses, and based on level of work, have a different incentive. And so, an example would be if you're an HVAC technician, mm-hmm. what about accelerated PTO, or what about bonuses layered in at 6 months, a year, those sorts of things. And so, this way, you're incentivizing them and giving them a carrot. But again, you don't want to lose the yes, you want them to be compensated because that is the blocking and mm-hmm. tackling, but you also want to look at maybe flexibility and understand if that's important to them. So I saw where Chick-fil-A, mm-hmm. they just introduced a 3-14-hour day work week. Mm-hmm. And so is that something you could do where instead of the Monday to Friday for all of your technicians,
yep.
could we do 3-15s and then kind of think of them as, the Monday to Wednesday shift and then a Thursday to Saturday shift,
sure.
so to speak, and then flip-flop them or maneuver that. Or it's maybe cutting the day in half where mm-hmm. you start at 8 o'clock and you end at 1 and then having a second shift come in. And again, that might not work, but it's one of those things where how can you think creatively to get that work-life innovation, integration down?
If I can find the people, I mean, there are some, especially younger employees who are not morning people, would love to
Absolutely.
Work a little bit later shift.
Yes.
Right? I'll work 12 to 8. You know, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right? And then that gives you the opportunity then to provide straight time work for, mm-hmm. you know, in after hours when people are coming home and things like that. Makes sense to me. All right. So got all that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and again, the one thing that I would say is, again, today with the wages, they are going up. They have to go up. If you're not increasing that, if you're not looking at your current team, you're going to lose them. You also need to be then looking at your pricing on a regular basis to make sure Absolutely. That your business model is such that you can handle that. And if this is the entire industry, it's not just you. So let's move over to the other side being qualitative. Mm-hmm. And I really think the qualitative part really, that's where a company becomes human, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so the way I always like to think about it is, when you go in and bid on a job, mm-hmm. you're dealing with people. And so there's always the price standpoint. And everybody says they want the cheapest and best price. But let's face it, that's not the case.
Right.
They want quality. And they're not always going to pick the cheapest cost. Sometimes they will. And you have to ask yourself, are those the customers
Is
you really,
really
want long term?
Right. Yep.
Right. So from a employee standpoint, yes, you have to check the box when it comes to compensation and benefits. But then when you're, you know, again, just like on when you focus on your employees as you would in marketing with your customers, mm-hmm. you're really kind of building out more of a feel and a brand for those customers so that they know they're calling on when they work with XYZ mm-hmm. HVAC or plumbing company, they know what they get. It's mm-hmm. not just a good cost. It's quality work. Mm-hmm. It's friendly, cordial technicians who, you know, you see them put the booties on mm-hmm. before they go up your stairs to work on your system.
Right.
And those are the kinds of things that set you apart, and people will then refer you. So the same thing with employees. What are you doing to kind of build this internal brand mm-hmm. to where employees say, yeah, this is the type of company I want to work for. And so I'll just say a great place to start with that is if you've done your mission, vision, values, those sorts
sure.
of things.
Know
Very
who
important
we are
to have those
as a company.
Belief statements. Absolutely.
And so when you talk about that brand, right, I always tell all of my all of our customers that you have a brand. Whether
Absolutely.
You realize it or not, you have a bad
That's
brand.
Right.
The question is a good brand or a bad brand?
Mm-hmm.
But you have a brand. You're actually talking about a separate brand here, an internal brand, which might tie in or would tie into the message our external brand, but it's probably a little bit different message that we're delivering to our team.
Absolutely.
In terms of who we are.
So a great example of that, where I work, we work with companies with single digits. We work with companies who have 10, 20, 30,000 employees and more. Mm-hmm. And so we actually acquired an agency, a marketing agency that's what they did. They did internal communications, and they were doing it for very large brand names. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about Fortune 50 companies. Mm-hmm. And they were doing it so that, you know, when you do your benefits open enrollment, typically you might have a sheet of paper or a small guide, mm-hmm. or you might have an online system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of times the only time you sit down as a company and really, really go through things other than workflows. And it's just one communication touch point. Well, how can you expand that throughout the year so that you're in more constant communication? And sometimes that's in a technology format. Sometimes it's in a meeting format. And again, it's not just a meet and kind of mm-hmm. Just to check the box.
Sure.
But it's like having set things throughout the year. And that might be reinforcing like, hey, don't forget we have this employee assistance program. We have this financial wellness program. We have these different programs. And so you're at that point, you're reminding them of all the benefits that you offer, and you're reminding them of your values. Mm-hmm. Here's what this company stands for. Here's who started the company. I think it's very important for people
to know
the company history.
Totally
Absolutely.
Agree. Totally agree.
And so when you come in, you know, the company I worked for was started by the current CEO's grandfather in 1930, I believe, right in there. And so we're a publicly traded company, but we're still family run.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a neat story. We have 41,000 sure. employees globally. So we're very large, but at the end of the day, we're still a tight family.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you say things like that, employees really buy. I bought into that. So mm-hmm. employees buy into that, and they can really feel proud of a place where they work, and that's where you start to build engagement as well. Sure. And that's not a metric. I mean, that's an intangible.
It really is, but it's an intangible, quite frankly, that can keep somebody tied to my company.
That's right, and it's an intangible that's important to this up-and-coming generation. When we look at 20-year-olds to say 30, 35-year-olds, mm-hmm. they're more concerned about what difference am I making in society. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, this generation coming up, if they were born in 1998, we'll call it 1998, 2000, whichever, mm-hmm. they hear stories about the Twin Towers.
Right.
And then when they were a kid, they had the great financial recession, 2008 happened.
Yeah, right.
And so now they're one or more of their parents is laid off, right?
Yeah.
And then we go into just the shenanigans of all that's happened with the pandemic.
Yep.
And so, it's amazing. They don't, this is generally speaking.
Sure.
They're less apt to get married. They're very less apt to have children, mm-hmm. And they want to know they're making a difference, mm-hmm. and that they're kind of waiting for the shoe to drop, like something bad to happen. Mm-hmm. So it's that combination of, well, we just want to live while we can and have a lot of flexibility in what we do, but it's also that combination of, we're kind of waiting for the next bad thing to happen.
Yeah. One of the things that kind of tied in with that, one of the things that I've done fairly regularly is I meet with my team every Monday. We're scattered, and so that gives us an ability to everybody touch base again and keep that connection a little bit. But then I'll ask the question, okay, we've got our seven key tenets as a company.
Mm-hmm.
Who are we? What do we stand for? And, let's say, pick one of them, right? Where, give me some examples. How have we exhibited this tenet over the last 2 weeks?
What's the evidence of it?
Yep.
And so I think the absolute worst thing you can do is have a value that's not a value.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always like to use so apologies to any Raiders fans, but the Oakland Raiders, mm-hmm. right? What's their tagline? Commitment to excellence. Well, mm-hmm. when was the last time they were excellent, right? I mean, no offense, but I think you made the playoffs once in the last 15 years.
Right.
So, is it really something you're committed to? Mm-hmm. And employees are really good at snuffing that out, the truth mm-hmm. from what's just kind of fluff.
Right.
And so that can actually, we want to have really true values that we can exhibit. There's evidence of it that mm-hmm. we can point to, because if we don't, it actually works in the opposite.
Sure.
And you start demotivating
employees.
It erodes trust in the leadership.
Right. I think that's so important. And as a leader, we look at that and go, wow. Again, especially for us who are a little bit older, going, well, look, I gave you a job, I'm giving you a paycheck, right. Do your job and stop complaining. But
absolutely.
That doesn't work anymore, right?
That's right.
And I firmly believe that you have to kind of build that. That is really that whole, that is that culture, mm-hmm. right, that you're building in the company. And, the tag, I guess, the story that, line that we use, culture, or the analogy, I guess, the culture is like a tree in your company, mm-hmm. right? It takes forever to grow and to mature, but it can be cut down in a minute.
Yes.
And so you need to protect that with everything that you have and everything you are.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think for those who have been in business a good while, it's about really cultivating it. Like, you have the tree,
mm-hmm.
but you just need to define it better and really, really understand it more. Because like you said, there is a brand there
mm-hmm.
and there are values there, but you have to pull them out of people because they haven't sat down to just say, what do we really value? And so mm-hmm. when you start looking at the evidence and backing into buckets, so to mm-hmm. speak, of what these values are,
yep.
it becomes very powerful. And sometimes you'll see business owners, the light bulb goes off. Yeah, that is one of our values. Mm-hmm. We do stand for that.
Sure.
And you've got evidence to point to for it.
And I think that goes all the way around and pays dividends, and not to toot our horn. But we had an example here where we had an employee who had a family member that was very close to death. And earlier you had mentioned the comment about disengaging, right, with something going on. Well, in my mind, that particular team member is not going to be able to focus. They're not going to be able to do really anything that they need to hear. In my mind is, okay, why are you here?
Absolutely.
Right? One of our key points internally is family first. And so, let's get you on an airplane and go, right,
yeah.
and get out of here. And I think that stuff is important because
absolutely.
They're important as a person. And so, all right. So one of the other areas that you had mentioned in the qualitative side was communications. Now, a lot of what we're talking about here is communication, but talk to me about that a little bit.
Sure. I think when you look at it, you have to, again, unpack where the communication touch points are right now with your employees. And is it just surrounding workflow, like we all get in a room and then we kind of have a little scrum where everybody knows what they're doing for the day and then they all scatter? Mm-hmm. Or is there a communication of what the company offers? And again, it doesn't have to be every time, and you don't want to overload employees, but even just little reminders along the way. Mm-hmm. And the other aspect of it is not only what are you doing today and then how can you expand on that, mm-hmm. where's the communication lacking? So when you look at different layers, what I've typically seen is the layer of communication in the executive to, say, middle management is really good. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk, for example, mergers and acquisitions.
Sure.
If the company's looking at being acquired, the executive, the owner definitely knows what's happening. Mm-hmm. The middle management has a good idea of what's happening. The frontline employees, they think they're all about to get fired,
right,
you know, as soon as they get wind of an acquisition. Mm-hmm. So how can we better facilitate the communication between the layers of employees there? Mm-hmm. And that comes with setting a plan. You don't have to say exactly what we're going to commute. You know, right now we're sitting here, it's November. What are we going to communicate in September 2023? Well, you don't know exactly what the message is going to be,
right?
But you can start planning today. Like, we need to have something mm-hmm. for that month. And so you could sure. look at it as a monthly calendar, mm-hmm. Just like you would have a P&L each month. You can start putting layering in communication right alongside that. And again, it doesn't have to be, you know, a 20-page case study. Mm-hmm. It can just be little snippets along the way that are reinforced. So maybe something in an email. Maybe, and then it's reinforced in a meeting. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, you get kind of a topic and a theme that you're generating
each
month.
And you start weaving it into what you're talking about or what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. I think that's so important because, yeah, again, what we're talking about is what tends to get the attention. And we can say,
that's an amazing comment you just made. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
What you're talking about gets the attention.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Right. We can have the plaque on the wall with the key values and who we are as a company. But if we never ever talk about it, we're never weaving that stuff into what we're doing. We're never communicating it. And, you know, even a little bit more, I don't want to say serious issues, but those items, right, you mentioned about, you know, okay, we're going to sell the company. Mm-hmm. Right? First off, there is a right and a wrong time to announce that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But then, you know, in any of those cases, right, it's so important to communicate with the team on a regular basis. And so let's look at that
a little bit. I think one other thing is you start, what happens is if you don't communicate these positives, you're going to communicate the negatives.
Right.
Right? Our expenses are running out of control. I need to communicate that. Mm-hmm. Well, how do employees start thinking about that in their head? Well, finances aren't good at this company because right. they're harping on us about expenses. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if this company is going to be here. You know, they start running with things. And right. so you really want to reinforce that. When you talk about your vision for the company over the next 3 years, I mean, that tells people you're going to be around for the next mm-hmm. 3 years. And so to counteract negative comments with, like, here's the positive comments, but here's also where we're going.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think today, you know, especially when we look at it with where we are today and looming, you know, are we in a recession or can we even say that word or, right, all of those comments. And then you hear on top of that, you know, Twitter cut their workforce by 50% and Microsoft, you know, just laid off how many thousands of people and Amazon is cut, right? And what are they thinking?
Mm-hmm.
I'm next,
yeah.
right?
Absolutely.
And isn't it interesting that
in supply chain, we haven't even talked about supply chain issues right. and those sorts of things. So you start throwing those in.
Those shortages are there. And so as we run into those problems, and yes, as a business leader, it's harder and harder to keep this ball rolling, but you got to keep, you know, repivoting, if you will, because, you know, you do it over and over again, to address whatever challenges are in front of us today. And isn't it interesting is that the narrative will always be complete. Whether it's right or wrong, it will always be complete.
That's a great point.
Right?
Great.
I mean,
it is
so if as the leader of the company, you are only giving them 25% of the information, they're going to fill in the other 75% with whatever they're thinking.
It's a great point.
Right? And so that communication, I think, is so critical. All right. So then the next one is leadership training.
So that's not only for the people around the owner of the company, but for the owner themselves. It's mm-hmm. this is a lot of what we're talking about is where you go from working in your business to working on your business.
Oh, there it is again.
Yeah, I know. Right. We hear that a lot, but it's so true. It's, you know, if you have 20 employees, they need to be led. They know how to do their work and they know how to do it well, but they don't know where they're going as an organization, mm-hmm. but you do. And so how do you effectively communicate that? How do you as a leader now step in and not just look at the metrics, although those are huge. I would never diminish the importance right. of metrics and, mm-hmm. and profitability and those sorts mm-hmm. of things, growth. But at the same time, you, as you grow, you have great growth plans, mm-hmm. right? Which means you're adding more employees, which mm-hmm. means you need better systems, which means you need to have a way to communicate better with your employees at every level of the organization.
And you can't do it all yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right? a great point.
Because too many times, especially in smaller companies, we look at it and go, well, I'm the leader of the company. Well, if everything falls on your shoulders, mm-hmm. right, and this is something that we've had to kind of, you know, go back and do some shifts here even within our company, is that if it all falls on your shoulder, then you are the bottleneck.
Yes.
You are, you know, you end up holding the company back mm-hmm. because you can't do it all.
And then people get frustrated because they don't feel like they're bought in because you haven't given them license to own it any mm-hmm. in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, if you've got good people, they want to take ownership.
Sure.
Because they want, they know, they're confident that they can do a good job, and they want the accolades, for lack of a better term, for that.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask this then. The, you know, so many times, I think as owners of the companies, especially small businesses, people that got into this because they like working with their hands and fixing things, mm-hmm. you know, they need to be involved. They're doers. Mm-hmm. And when things get tough, we just do, right? I'll jump in and do. And that's actually a detriment to the company, mm-hmm. especially when we're talking about this idea of leadership training, if we don't let members on our team lead, they won't lead, will they?
No, they won't. And that's an important point is, you know, you get so focused on, I think, Air Force fighter pilots, mm-hmm. they call it target fixation. Mm. And so you're so focused on your target, you don't see I'm not in the Air Force and I never was, the bogey coming on your left. So on your
yeah,
right.
But I've seen Top Gun.
Yeah, that's so right. I'm a big Maverick fan.
Navy, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Right.
So regardless, you get so focused on your target, you need to pick your head up and
sure.
look around
What's
and say,
on?
Are we all, you know, going in the right direction? Are we mm-hmm. are we aligned strategically in the organization? Mm-hmm. And those are where, you know, another great leadership point that. That's important to point out. Sometimes your best technicians are going to be your worst managers, and you get yeah. them. We see it in sales. We see it in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. You know, the most productive employees don't make the best managers all the time.
And it's interesting because when you know we talked about benchmarking earlier, and we've got an example, a very clear example of a star service technician and the metrics that it takes to be a superior performer in that role. And then you look at a service manager. And interestingly, the five of the top seven competencies required for a solid service manager are the bottom traits required for
Absolutely.
A service technician.
Yeah.
And so you got the star tech, you promote them, and they're just okay.
Yeah.
Or they're lousy. How do you go backwards?
Yeah.
Right? It's pretty tough.
And they're
it?
Frustrated now
yeah.
because they're having to deal with people, and they're used to working with systems and just working with their hands.
Right.
And it's like, if this is the problem, then this is the part I need. Mm-hmm. And now they go to customer service and it's like, well, I just solved your problem. I don't understand why you're still upset, right?
Right.
But we're dealing with emotions and that's just hard to maneuver.
Absolutely.
And so you're right. The people who maybe aren't always the best technicians, but at least have the knowledge of how things work mm-hmm. in an HVAC system
sure.
or what have you. Those are the people that can deal with the human issues, mm-hmm. the emotions of it, the mm-hmm. the really what's your intent behind this? Are you just trying to get a discount? Or is there a bigger problem that I'm not seeing?
Right. Absolutely. And I think also, you know, the other thing to remember is on that leadership training is that as a leader, you need to be training the next leader. Because
yes.
quite frankly, if, you know, that's on a bigger scale, if your company can't function without you, if you don't have those other leaders in place, you can't leave.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, you have nothing to sell at that point. You know,
yeah.
Your business is worth a lot less. And so it should be able to function without you on that part. So I want to come
Absolutely.
Back to one other. You started out our time together, and you mentioned a new term, right? And you mentioned the term, the big regret. So I just wanted to circle back to that one more time, because again, in this, you know, what is it, something like, what's the percentage today, the number of people who are planning on moving to a different job?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
like, so if you see, so the high was in March of 22.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've actually decreased from that high.
Okay.
But it's still way above pandemic, pre-pandemic levels.
Sure.
And so when you look at the amount of people, mm-hmm. it's still a huge glut of people. And I apologize. I actually looked up the Bureau of Labor Statistics tonight, and I forget what the exact number is.
Yeah, but it's well over 50%, if yeah. I remember correctly. And so that piece of the puzzle, when I look at that, you know, people may leave, right? So, and then I think you said earlier, then they find out the grass wasn't yeah. always greener.
Absolutely.
And they want to come back. How can I, as a leader, keep that door open? Is there something that I, a good way to handle that mm-hmm. when somebody leaves?
And the other facet of that is they move, and it's not maybe that they're, they regret it, but now the company might regret it too. Like, oh, we hired too many.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were some good people that we recruited away from other companies and we're paying them more, which means it's a bigger expense
mm-hmm.
and it's sucking our profitability and we've got a dip in work.
Mm-hmm.
And now,
which is going to be coming up in the trades industries across the board.
Absolutely. So now we've got it from both sides, the employee mm-hmm. side as well as the employer side.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so important to stay in touch with your previous workers. And, you know, we talked about conducting the exit interview mm-hmm. and really finding out, you know, most people, there are people who will leave for more money,
mm-hmm.
But there's usually a disconnect somewhere in there. And so I'll use that as an example. If I'm leaving your work,
mm-hmm.
Your place of business for more money,
mm-hmm.
well, that's not just a money issue. It's we never talked about compensation, mm-hmm. right? So
true.
It kind of comes to a communication thing. Issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so, is there something I could have done beforehand, or is there something I could have known from benchmarking studies and understanding mm-hmm. what my competition is paying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I have a network of people like you've built up who really understand what people are paying their mm-hmm. employees, and how can I use that in my organization to either stop people from leaving,
mm-hmm.
or when they tell me they're leaving, maybe save them, maybe
sure.
say, well, tell me what you're making, and we'll match it or up it, those mm-hmm. sorts of things. Because that's another thing we're seeing now, and I've never seen this before, where, you know, if a fast food worker didn't show up for their first day of employment, that mm-hmm. that's normal. But we're seeing, you know, controllers and HR managers and, I mean, executives who are not showing up because their previous employers are saying, how much are they paying you? You know, we'll go ahead and match it. We'll yeah. match it plus 5%, whatever the amount is to get mm-hmm. you to stay, because we want you to stay.
And so you can get a lot of good information out of that exit interview. And, you know, and one of the questions that that I always like in that process is, you know, now again, depending on how the separation is taking place, is would you recommend this company to other people? Because it's interesting, the number of people will say, well, I'm leaving. But would I recommend this company? Absolutely.
Absolutely. That's right.
And that's an
interesting. But I'm going to an unknown because I'm making $2 more an hour.
Right. Right. And that in itself, right, kind of tells you something as far as where you need to be, where you're at.
Yes.
Well, this is interesting. Again, big topic. Again, many times we don't focus on it as much as we should within our companies. Man, it's been a great conversation, Vince. I appreciate your being
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
It's interesting. Any final thoughts that you want to just pass on as we go through here that we need to think of big picture-wise?
Yeah, I would say these are not soft or intangible things. These are human skills that we need to develop. We need to not only understand the metrics and the financials are hugely important.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would never diminish that. But alongside that, you know, if you think of the two tracks on a train, mm-hmm. you've got the financials on one side, you've got the quantitative, but you've got the qualitative that's necessary too. And so looking at your employees as if they were customers, and how would I market to them, and you don't need to spend, you know, a ton of money mm-hmm. to do that, but building your internal brand, your values, really taking care of your employees, but even more looking at your organization
mm-hmm.
in a holistic manner, which the engine of that is your employees.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.